Welcome to Banyan Books, Branches of Wisdom, celebrating the joy of bright ideas and heartful lifelong learning. Branches of Wisdom is a series of intimate conversations with the world's most influential authors and visionaries. We explore spirituality and the human mind, ecology and culture. Most episodes are recorded with a live audience. You can join our live events and submit questions to your favorite guests. Check out our upcoming schedule at banyan.com. Since 1970, Banyan Books has been a rich oasis at the crossroads of wisdom and philosophy, offering resources for humanity's evolving paths. We're a locally owned, independent bookstore in the heart of Vancouver's Kitsilano neighborhood. Visit us in person or shop online at banyan.com. Please subscribe, follow, like, and leave your reviews for the podcast. And now, enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Branches of Wisdom, the Banyan Books podcast. I'm your host, Ross McKeachy, and I'm very, very excited today to be joined by Tara McLean. Now, before we get to our conversation with her, Banyan Books acknowledges that although we have people joining us from all over the world for these live streaming events, the physical location of Banyan Books and Sound is on the traditional and unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. Most of Banyan's events and podcasts are free. We welcome your donations to keep these programs accessible for all. Just click on the PayPal link in the show description below. Also, letting everybody know here in our live audience that towards the end of our conversation this evening, we're going to be taking your questions for Tara McLean. So go ahead and type those into the comments field on YouTube and we'll get to as many of those as we can. Okay, our guest, Canadian singer-songwriter Tara McLean, has been an internationally renowned and award-winning recording and touring artist for over 25 years. She is also an environmental and social justice activist, a Zen student, a poet, author, and a playwright. She released her first album in 1996 with the Network Music Group and Sony Music Publishing Canada. Since then, she has been signed with Capitol Records and EMI Canada with her Juno-nominated band, Shay. She has written and recorded 6 solo albums and 2 with the band. She finished a run of 3 summer seasons with her hit theater show that she wrote, produced, and directed called Atlantic Blue, the stories of Atlantic Canada's iconic songwriters in Charlottetown. Tara received the SOCAN Songwriter of the Year Award as well as Solo Recording of the Year for her latest album, Deeper, at the PEI Music Awards. Deeper was nominated for Pop Album of the Year at ECMA in 2020. Also, last year, Tara received the Stomp and Tom Award by the East Coast Music Association, marking an outstanding contribution to music in the region. Today, Tara McLean is with Banyan Books in conversation about her first book, Song of the Sparrow, which hit the bestseller list the week it was released, and Tara quickly followed up with Sparrow, the soundtrack for the book. Until now, Tara McLean hasn't disclosed the details of how the power of song saved her from a childhood filled with danger. Song of the Sparrow is a daring, heartbreaking, and provocative memoir of a life filled with music, told with the same raw, open, and elegant poetry that Tara's fans have come to expect. From her early days in PEI through her teenage years in BC to her meteoric rise in the music, Song of the Sparrow reveals Tara's remarkable strength and shows that a song and a wide open heart are the best weapons for fighting monsters. If you want to learn more about today's honored guest, you can visit her website, which is Tara McLean Music. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in a warm welcome. We're honored to have her, Tara McLean.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Tara. It's so good to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ross. I'm honored. Very excited.
Now, I understand we're going to open with a song. What are you going to play for us?
I think I'll play Sparrow, which is from the new album and is sort of the theme to the book. So let's start with that one. You ready?
Ready.
Spend my life looking for a missing piece, desperate for some release. I heard a call from deep inside. I was lonely, I was tired, I was empty, uninspired. Last night looking for you in my bed, but you left before I said that you could go. Scream and shout till I'm pity partied out, looking more like I'm about to be alone. Something changed. It's the arrow in the bow, the sparrow in the song, the marrow in the bone. Nothing's unforgivable when you let go. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Tara. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
I'll let you put your earbuds in there. I know for the sound, it's going to be better. Now, nothing is unforgivable when you let go. That is really a theme that runs through this profoundly beautiful and courageous book that you've written. And I just want our audience to know, read this book. It is absolutely wonderful. And I was telling Tara before, I finished the book today, and every time I sat down and read this book, I think I cried in a beautiful way. In different ways, I cried. Can you just tell us a little bit about the ways that you found forgiveness in your journey?
Well, you know, one of the things that I realized is that there's sort of different ideas of what forgiveness is. And so, you know, for me, my idea of it wasn't that, you know, it gives someone, you know, permission to continue hurting you. You know, it's, you know, you've been harmed. And then you realize that to forgive them really just means you're not going to allow them to hurt you any further into the future. And so there's a certain letting go of that is required. And it doesn't mean that they, you know, it's not, it doesn't mean that they sort of, you know, get off scot-free for whatever they've done. But it's really important, I think, for us to move forward, to keep lightening the load, you know, and I do, of course, use the bird metaphor so much in the, you know, ad nauseum in the book. But it is the idea of, like, you know, we can just fly a lot higher if we let go of the things that hold us down. And I think forgiveness is an absolute key in that.
Of course, in that song, your reference to nature and the guidance of nature is strong as well. And that comes throughout the book and your life journey. It seems like you've always come back to nature, but it's rooted in your early childhood. You spent time in this cabin in the forest in Cardigan, PEI. Can you tell us about your early childhood experiences there?
Well, we were very free range kids, which is sort of how I've been raising my kids on Salt Spring Island here. And it was just a wonderful way to grow up. We were off grid in this beautiful little cabin in Eastern Prince Edward Island. And so, you know, I think like anyone who's grown up that way, you're very in tune with the seasons. And, you know, we got our water from a little pump outside or from the river in the winter. And it was, you know, it was really beautiful. I can't believe my mom did it. I mean, I can hardly do it with a dishwasher and a washing machine. I don't know how she did it with us all, you know, washing her clothes by hand and all of that. But yeah, it was really lovely. And it definitely informed the way that I moved through the world. I was allowed to just be outside unsupervised all the time and felt very safe. And that was, I think, a very formative experience.
You mentioned your mother. What was her name?
My mother is Charlene.
Charlene.
Yeah.
Now, you describe her as the most exquisite, talented, and brilliant human being that had ever existed. And she was a queen in my eyes, as so many mothers are to their daughters at that age. That was how you saw her as a child. Can you tell us a bit about your mother?
Absolutely. She still is all of those things. She's had, you know, quite the journey. In fact, I would say that this book is a lot about her as well, because it was really important for me to tell the story of my mother and of my grandmother in order to understand the intergenerational, you know, lineage of, you know, and cycles and pain and behaviors and addictions and abuse. And so my mother very generously gifted me with family stories and her stories that no one knew until the book came out. So I find her to be still incredibly brave and brilliant. And she really helped me to make this book happen. She is an incredibly brilliant woman in the sense that she's also, you know, incredibly deeply studied in, you know, she's a deeply Christian and Wiccan woman and a fascinating human being and still one of the kindest people I've ever known.
Yeah, so that reminds me, there's a little section I'd love if you could share with us. So maybe to lead into it, you can tell us your mother was a practicing Wiccan first,
along
with Marty, your dad. And well, I want to talk about Marty a little bit after this, but mm-hmm. then they found the Christian God and were mm-hmm. part of the evangelical Christian church. That's right.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes, my mom was studying the occult in London when she was pregnant with me and was at Stonehenge with the Druids and worked at this amazing little bookstore in London called Watkins Books, and a very magical bookstore. And so I love that kind of I was there with her through that phase. But then they went back to Canada for a little while. And it was at the time in the early 70s when a big Christian revival was happening. And my dad, who I later learned was my stepdad, you'll have to read the book for all those crazy details. But he was a singer-songwriter as well. And he found a lot of appreciation and acceptance singing gospel music. So we would travel around in the van singing gospel music in different churches. And that's how we made our money, was from the collection plate. That's how they fed us and put gas in the car. And so, you know, I really learned that music was about, you know, communion and, you know, lifting people's hearts. And so we were, this particular part that you wanted me to read is set in an evangelical ashram in Nova Scotia when I was 4 years old. And I came very close to drowning in the river that day. And so, yes, fortunately, my mother decided that she needed to teach me how to swim.
Folks, I just want you to know, yeah, please, before you read that, Tara, I just want everybody to know that this passage Tara's about to read is just a snapshot of the beautiful and poetic writing that you see throughout this book. Okay.
Oh, thank you, Rasa. Okay. That night, my mother insisted that we go back down to the river's edge. I didn't want to go. Resistant, but knowing better than to argue, the fifth commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. I found myself standing in the moonlight at a calm part of the river, an estuary where its mood was still. There was a slight hint of salt, night bugs singing, fireflies silently dancing. My mother picked me up and walked into the water until it was up to her waist. I clung to her. I could feel the warmth of her neck as I buried my face and the cool water on my feet. She lowered me into the dark pool and told me to float on my back. I squeezed tighter. Trust me, she said. Slowly, I loosened my grip and unclenched my body. With her hands underneath my back, I stretched out and lay on top of the water. She whispered, I'm going to let go, but there is a trick. If you think you're going to sink, you will sink. If you trust that you will float, you will float. As her hands moved away, I felt the water pull me down, my body heavy, a stone girl. I began to panic and went under. Now she pulled me up and held me as I clung to her, eyes shut. Now she said softly, again, tilt your head up so you can see the moon. Forehead touching the water, chin up, relax, breathe, and trust. She whispered a prayer, an incantation to life, asking that I be taken care of when her hands couldn't hold me. A protection spell. Mother calling on the mother to keep me safe. Her hands left my back, and something else rose from the depths to take her place. Something held me. Kept me from sinking. I became moonlight. I trusted the river. I trusted the water, my mother, and the moon. I trusted myself, and that is what held me and always has. That was my baptism.
This devotional view on life and the divine feminine that is woven through this book is profoundly beautiful. And one of the kind of core themes from what I saw was the empowerment of the feminine, and you as a woman finding that power and the power of sisterhood and women supporting each other. Can you just, there's so many wonderful relationships in this book. Can you talk about your relationships with your sisters, and your sisters from like friend sisters as well, and how you've found support and strength in those women?
Yes. I mean, I've just been so blessed. My younger sister, Shay, was only 18 months younger than me. So I grew up, you know, that know-it-all big sister, and got to show her the ropes here on earth. And that was a pretty lucky break that I got, because she was one of the most phenomenal and funny and brilliant people. And I got to be her sister for 27 years before she passed away in a car accident. And then I, you know, I ended up in a band with two other women. Then we named it after her. We named it Shay. But my other sister, before I talk about those women who are amazing, my other sister is named Bridie, and she is 10 years younger than me, and she's the coolest person in the universe, and so smart and so beautiful, and also an amazing writer, and yeah, just an incredible. She's an RMT and a yoga teacher, and just all the fabulous things. And she also has an incredible podcast, a very sex positive podcast called Turn Me On, which I recommend everybody. I was a guest on that. If you want to hear a very different side of me, listen to that podcast. So I got really lucky with my sisters and with my mom. And then I was also very close with my grandmother. But then when I joined the band, Shay, I just, again, you know, it was the perfect timing because Shay had passed away. And that's really when I learned that life, you know, when there's an opening, when there's a vacancy, you know, if you just sit in that emptiness for a little while and in the discomfort, that life just fills it up. And these two amazing women came and stood beside me and helped me up. And we just played music and healed my heart and had the best time together. And we made some great records and wrote some incredible songs. You know, we toured in Asia and all over Canada and got nominated for Juno. And yeah, that's a blast. I'm really, really proud of that music and proud that those two women, Kim Stockwood and Davina Doyle, are still two of my closest sisters.
Wonderful. A little bit on the challenges that women face, and this is the I don't know if darker side is the right word, but the some of the big issues that many women face in our world around body image and conditioning and impossible standards around physical beauty. That's a core theme in this book and something you've wrestled with, as well as the lasting trauma of surviving sexual abuse. I want to just share a short quote. You were writing about your dance class as a teenager, and you said the following: "The other dancers had a freedom I didn't have. They inhabited their bodies. I dissociated. My moves were hesitant, and no matter how often the choreography was repeated, my body had no recall. Where was I? I was in the mirror, but I wasn't in me. The hungry ghost of my grandmother followed me into every reflection. All the men who had touched me without my consent had left their heavy, greasy fingerprints." I wonder if you can tell us about your grandmother, your Nana, and this, what you call this hungry ghost that followed you. Where did that come from?
Well, my grandmother was very close to me. She was very much a mother-like figure to me, and she had a lot of body issues. She was sort of a sitting duck for the diet industry in the 70s and 80s. She was a bigger woman. Her husband was incredibly abusive to her, to my mother as well, also sexually abusive and violent. And so, she really saw being thin as a massive success. Like if you could, if you could conquer that, you know, she was just always at war with herself, and she imbued that in me, making sure that I knew, you know, what calories I was eating and, the calorie count of everything that went in my body, which of course just very easily slipped into, you know, once I started to develop and become my own juiciness, you know, really resisting that and trying to do anything to stop that from happening. And yeah, and not loving my body and developing an eating disorder. And you know, it was just, it was a mess. And, you know, the journey toward making peace with your body and realizing that you are a miracle, and, you know, in that the fact that we exist at all is just absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, it's been a long journey, but I really wanted to share it because, you know, even though I keep thinking, okay, we're coming further as women, you know, here in this day and age, I still see, you know, I have three daughters and they're, you know, it's still there, this desperate need to look a certain way. And so I wanted to share my journey with it because it's also a big healing journey towards self-love and acceptance.
Yeah, it's a powerful part of the story that I think would be very helpful for many women of all ages. What I remember reading when you were talking about your high school years at St. Douglas in Victoria, and you had this wonderful group of girlfriends, but you said that pretty much every one of you had some kind of eating disorder going on at that time. Mm-hmm. You all spoke about it openly. What would you say? Yeah, please.
I would say even if it was just restricting, you know, even if it was just dieting, even if it was just like the constant awareness of their size and their weight, like whether it, you know, they were bulimic or anorexic, like the, you know, the two bigger, more well-known ones, but just, you know, all of them, all of us were, and we would comment on, you know, each other. And it was done out of love and support and trying to make sure we all, you know, looked our best. You know, we were still very much, you know, the patriarchy is insidious.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And of course, as you got into the music industry, it came up a lot. Have you seen that change at all in the music industry to date?
I think so. It probably depends on who is at the helm of the career. I don't know. I know that there is a lot more body positivity happening. It's talked about a lot more, and I feel like the more that, you know, we rise and accept and love ourselves, the more that's happening. And there's also a lot, you know, more examples of women in their fullness, you know, and just being themselves. You know, I think that's really it. And that feels really, really good to see. So yes, I would say in some ways we're making strides. But then in other ways I see, you know, I see sort of the same stuff repeating. So we have a long way to go.
Yeah. What do you think men can do to support that process?
Gosh, great question. I would say probably just love and support, and, you know, don't comment on women's appearances. Like, maybe not make that the central aspect of everything all the time, you know, like so much more than that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just love us.
Just love you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Marty, who mm-hmm. we touched on earlier, he originally as a young girl, you were under the impression he was your biological father. You later learned, in fact, your biological father was a man named Danny who was on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But Marty was the one who really brought music into your life, wasn't he?
Yes. Danny is also a singer, so it's handy. So I, you know, I showed up with a singing voice, but Marty was such an incredible, passionate musician and a great guitar player and songwriter. And so he would sit at the foot of our bed every night and sing us to sleep. And he taught us to sing harmony and really, encouraged me as a young performer.
Now, for the audience, you're going to have to read this book to hear all the details, but eventually you end up at Danny, your biological father's place on the West mm-hmm. Coast in Victoria to live with him. Mm-hmm. And you had a profoundly life-changing moment when you missed your ferry to Salt Spring Island. You're going to play at the market there mm-hmm. and you ended up on the next ferry. Can you tell us what happened on that ferry trip?
Yes. Legendary moment. I was just playing with some friends on the top deck, took out our guitars and started jamming together. And two people were on that ferry, a woman named Kathy Barrett, who was from Network Records, and Tony Murayama, who was also with Network, but was going to Sony Music. So they heard me and approached me and gave me their business card. And they said, "That was really beautiful. We didn't recognize some of those songs." And I said, "Oh yeah, I wrote those." And so they said, "Well, give us a call." And I did. And I ended up with a record deal from Network and a publishing deal from Sony. And I was with Network for 15 years and I'm still with Sony Music 28 years later.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Publishing. Mm-hmm.
And it was so cool to hear the loyalty that Sony had for you. They stayed in touch with you over the years through all the ups and downs and let you know that they were there for you.
Yes. It's been an incredible relationship. They're amazing people. The same people have been there forever. And, every time I send them a new song, it's like, yay, it's a new song. It's just so wonderful. And they've really made my life and career really spectacular.
And with Network initially, when you ran into Tawny and Kathy on the ferry, you said to them, yeah, that's Sarah McLachlan's record label.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. And when you first entered the music scene as a signed artist, Sarah McLachlan, she really embraced you, didn't she? She kind of took you under your wing. And there's this one part when you asked her for advice and she said, "I'm not really an advice giver, but one thing I would say is not to lose your center." Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you just tell us about that and a bit about your relationship with Sarah and what she meant to you? Or means to you, sir?
Yeah. She, Fumbling Toward Ecstasy, she was touring that album. So it was, that is a masterpiece of an album. And I got to go see her live before I met her. And, the Network gave me front row tickets. And I just sat there and I thought, she is just so unbelievable and like so beautiful and ethereal and otherworldly. And then so down to earth and so real. And she was so kind to me. She did my hair and makeup for my first photo shoot and gave me a bunch of clothes because I was just this little hippie kid. I didn't have anything really. She showed up at my photo shoot with a big bag of clothes. She's like, "Oh yeah, keep it." And I used those clothes for the first year of touring. She was just so, so lovely. And then I got to go on Lilith Fair and, I've been really lucky to know her and feel supported by her and just be in awe of her all of these years. She is an example of a true sister in music. And Lilith Fair taught us all so much about how we can support each other and that we're not in competition, that we're there to really help each other rise. And that was just the best example I could have had.
I loved reading those stories about that supportive and encouraging embrace that you all had for each other. That just sounds like a wonderful environment as a creative artist.
Absolutely.
Now, when you're touring with Lilith Fair, when you made a stop in San Diego, you had what you described as, I'm quoting you, "the greatest musical moment of your life." Can you tell us what happened there?
Yes. So the Indigo Girls were playing and they were doing a song called "The Water is Wide." And on the year before, they'd done it with Jewel and Sarah. And it's such a beautiful performance. When I heard that album and their version of it the year before, I was just ripped my heart out. And I was in my dressing room with this little trailer, and all of a sudden I get this knock at the door and it's Sarah. And she's like, "Hey, Tara, I just had a question. Would you like to get up and sing Water is Wide with us tonight?" And I almost died. And she came in and she's like, "I'm just gonna write out the lyrics for you." And she had the most beautiful penmanship. She's such an artist. And she wrote out the words and I practiced all afternoon. And then, I got up on stage and got to sing in three-part harmony with them on this beautiful old Irish folk song in front of thousands and thousands, and like the biggest audience live I'd ever been in front of. And it was exhilarating. And just like looking over at them and just being on the stage was so fantastic. I mean, I was really nervous before I went on, but it just, you know, it really worked out. It was a great moment. And it's, I would say it's still, yeah, in my top moment.
You had all of these wonderful euphoric moments, and there was also behind the scenes, there was all of these lows. You were, I mean, it sounds like you were just getting worked to the bone. Was that yeah. commonplace in the music industry at that time?
I think so. I think it was also network management. They had, it was kind of like, you know, going to get your master's. Like you can, I can't even imagine like in performance, like it was just go, 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 because we were touring in Canada, touring in the United States. And there was, I was opening for Bare Naked Ladies, opening for Dido, doing Lil Affair. And we would do sometimes three performances a day, and it was all for our benefit, you know, like we were really trying to make big waves, and, you know, the ladies were breaking, obviously Dido had a huge hit song. So I was just kind of hanging onto their coattails, you know, riding around with everyone, and they were having big hit songs on the radio. And, you know, so I would wake up in the morning, I would do breakfast television, radio in the afternoon, full show at night, get in the van, drive to the next city. And there was one period, I don't think I went home for 18 months, not even for a break. And one day I just woke up and I couldn't remember any of my song lyrics. And my hands were just shaking. Like I clearly had fried my nervous system from all of the, you know, the constant traveling. And I just, yeah, I mean, I loved it, and it was time for a rest. And, you know, you don't know your edge until you, you know, step over it. And so I really learned that. And so I took a nice big break and got well. Well, actually, no, at that point, I only took a 3-day break, but that was good. And then I kept touring for a little while. But, you know, that was even, yeah, that had I signed with Capitol by then? I can't remember, bit of a blur. But Network Records and Network Management, you know, they worked us really hard. But it was, you know, it was for us, and it worked in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were touring with your first husband, Bill, who you had met when you were on tour with Tom Cochran, and he was Tom Cochran's guitar player. And eventually you two decided you wanted to have a child.
Yeah.
And there's a beautiful passage where you write about the birthing process with your first daughter, Sophia,
on page, what page was that?
That's on page 263.
Okay. Yes. Oh, yes. So I really, really wanted a home birth. So I was actually at Tom Cochran's house, Tom and Kathy Cochran's house. The birth was not as the peaceful water birth that I'd seen on YouTube. There were no dolphins swimming around me in the sea. The baby was in a position that didn't birth easily, and it wasn't turning around. Stubborn kid. Friends had flown in from LA and BC. Nana, Mum, Shay, and Bridie had to be there when the baby was born. Kim and Alan were there. The Cochrans created a beautiful, loving cocoon for everyone. They gave me their bedroom and tub to birth in. Amy, she's my best friend from LA, Amy held my hand for hours as the contractions came sporadically. Shay timed them and wrote them down. 15 hours later, I was throwing up from the pain of back labor. The position of the baby, posterior, meant its spine was against my spine. Imagine someone playing the xylophone with white hot pokers on your vertebra. The midwife agreed to transfer me to the hospital. I had been adamant that there was no way I was going to use drugs. I was going to do this naturally. But after experiencing this level of pain, I was going to do anything to get that baby out and have it over with. They gave me something called a walking epidural, which meant I could still move around and feel things except for the pain in my spine. I slept. Then the epidural wore off. The doctor at the hospital told the midwife that there was no way I could birth this baby without doctors. The midwife came into the room and told me what the doctor had said. For me, there is no better incentive than someone telling me I can't do something. Shay took over from Bill and held my hand. Hers was the most familiar hand in the world to me. When things began to get really intense, she leaned in and whispered to me, "Remember who you are. You are a warrior goddess, and I have seen you use your powers in ways that have changed the world. Call on that. You can do this." She took my hand in both of hers, and I reached down as far as I could. Hand over hand, I pulled myself underground by the roots. I dove far beneath the trees and mushrooms and tunnels of ants. They stopped and let me pass, like cars on the side of the road during a funeral procession. My hair filled with moss, my ears filled with dirt, and my mouth with mud. I pulled myself through the layers of earth, through the bones of my ancestors that lay in rows, white like shells. Further I went, through lava, where I burned off everything I knew to be true. All my flesh was gone as I broke into the center of it all. Silence. There was no pain here. Just stars. Just space. Voices around me began to echo. Sounds came from somewhere deeper. I listened to the bass, the far-off drum on the moors, the pipes, the low drone, the dungeon in the castle, the stones. Little bare feet running on red dirt, don't run away, run toward. My mother was holding me in the water, telling me to trust the river. You will float. The cold water surrounded me, swallowed me. I was sinking. No, trust, trust. I surrendered. I lay with all the other stones at the bottom, looking up at the moon. Push. Surfacing, gasping for air, the scream, and then the crescendo of every sound that has ever been. I saw the sound of the bright sun of eternity, a synesthetic union, a burning threshold I stepped through, breaking open. Only I wasn't me anymore. I had divided. Her name, Sophia, goddess of wisdom.
Wow.
Ah, oh, that made me emotional.
Yes. Tell me about that.
Oh, just, you know, just such a beautiful, beautiful thing to become a mother. And you know, so not anything that I expected, you know, just so, so big and so much deeper and harder and more beautiful. Like it just, yeah, expanded. Absolutely. But like things got really hard after that. So, you know, in the book, you know, there's this beautiful birth and, you know, this expectation. And then, you know, Shay died right after that. So it was, you know, pretty intense. So it was just emotional to read that and to feel Shay really present with me.
Do you still talk to her?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I sure do often.
The bond that you two shared is just, it's such a beautiful thing, the way you describe it in the book. And I remember the part where you talk about, I'm just paraphrasing, how in the next life, she'll be the older one leading you along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she went first. So, and it really did. It was interesting. After she passed away, it really changed my perception of death altogether, because I think the first big death in your life is so, it's so shocking, like the first birth, you know, it's wild and so transformational. And because it was someone so significant to me, and to so many people, it was a really, really big thing. And it made me a lot less afraid because I knew she was there already and I knew she'd take care of me. Whatever is there, whatever that is.
Well, on that note,
the great mystery.
The great mystery.
Yeah.
And there's some audience members with mysteries Ooh. That they'd like you to answer for them. But before sure. we get to those, I just want to remind everyone, go ahead and type those questions in. We've already got them rolling in. I wanted to ask you, though, about the great mystery. You found Zen as your spiritual practice and met your teacher, Peter Levine. Can you just share with us
Peter
a bit
Levitt.
About, oh, sorry, Peter Levitt, not Peter Levine. Yeah. Can you share with us the role that Zen has played in your life?
Zen is definitely the key to my to my sanity and groundedness and ability to, you know, when I need a bigger plate, just to make my plate bigger with my practice. It's a beautiful way to move through the world. And I honestly have to say, I think without it, I don't know that I would have found my songs again. You know, I took a big break from music and poetry and writing, and Peter really helped me find my way back through the practicing of the Dharma and meditation. So yeah, it's good stuff if you can get it. Highly recommend it. Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Banyan would have some, I think he's written some books that we might have at Banyan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then he's of the lineage of, you know, Suzuki Roshi, and, you know, it's, you know, all of those amazing books. So highly recommend.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Now there's some great questions here from our live audience. If you're ready to
get into that. Bring it.
Okay, great. So there's one here from Nancy who says, "You are so inspiring with your open heart, outlook on life, and willingness to forgive." In September at the Festival of Authors, you mentioned you wrote this book for your daughters. Mm-hmm. In addition to finding courage to write the book, how did you find the courage to keep pushing through your experiences to find such peace and forgiveness?
I guess I would probably say, hi, Nancy. I would probably say to that, you know, finding the courage, it's really the only choice I felt that I had. I really want to live a life that is full. I want to experience this whole thing as fully and completely as I can, with as much love as I can. And, you know, we're all just fumbling around here in this crazy world, making mistakes and hurting each other and ourselves. And I think that, you know, there comes a time where you just have to, you know, let those things go and realize that we have to be of service to each other. And if we can find that love, then we can actually, you know, really be of service to the world. So that's, I think the courage that I have is inspired by actually a lot of the people that I see around me doing really good and important work in the world, and finding where the love is needed, and then taking their energy there. And I wanted to write this book for my daughters because I want them to know that they come from, you know, strong lineage of women, and that they have that courage in them as well. And then anyone else who reads it, I hope, you know, we all have it. We all have the capacity to let go and fly.
There's another question here from funny YouTube name. The YouTube name is Nick Cage Fan. So Nick Cage Fan says, "I heard your Sparrow show at Confederation Center was recorded. Is there any chance that will be released in the future?"
Great question, because I just got the audio of that today. And and have been listening to it and working with the director right now to, we're not going to release the whole show, but we'll release a few of the songs as live performance. Yeah. And I would really love to do is take that show on the road. That's really the goal of that. It is in a way, it's like my book, but in a stage show, which is something I love doing, and I love theater tours. So hopefully some of it will be released, but hopefully it will be coming to a town near you.
All right. We look forward to hearing more about that. And your website is taramcleanmusic.com, and people can follow you on Instagram as well, right?
That's right. Yes.
And there's another question from Nancy on the note of your Instagram. Nancy says, "On your Instagram, you mentioned you were working on a second book. I know you just started, but do you have a potential release date yet, or is that still to be determined?"
Yes, that's to be determined. I only started really writing it over the last few weeks. And so I think it's going to be quite a long process, but I'm so excited about it. And it's kind of writing itself. It woke me up at 2:30 this morning, so I'm very tired because it wanted me to do some research. I just woke up, couldn't go back to sleep because the book was making me write it. So it's a bossy book. So bossy. I think it's going to be really fun. Yeah.
Well, this perfectly leads into this next question from John about the creative process. John says, music has been a great blessing in your life. Has it ever felt like a burden to carry?
Oh, I you know, yes, at times. Probably because I really wanted to do some other things with my life as well. You know, like I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be an environmental lawyer. And, but because I was like good at singing and people seemed to resonate when I did and like it, it just felt like what I kind of had to do. So there were times definitely when I would have loved to do anything else than get up on stage. But then always once I'm up there, I'm really glad that I am there. But you know, it definitely, there, like a little bit, but only when I was really tired and really burnt out did it feel that way. I have had the most blessed life and have had so many experiences meeting some of the greatest musicians in the world, singing on some of the most beautiful stages. And I still have huge dreams, like massive dreams that I have yet to see through. So I have every intention of continuing to walk toward them and make them happen. So yeah, at times it did feel heavy, but not anymore, never anymore.
That reminds me, there's a part in the book, I'll preamble it with, you tell the story of when you're doing a 3-day sort of silent retreat for yourself on Salt Spring, mm-hmm. and you were wandering at the Salt Spring Center of Yoga, mm-hmm. and you came upon Baba Hari Das, the mm-hmm. ashram's founder, and of course he had been silent for 42 years by that point, and you wrote out a question for him mm-hmm. about your music career. What can you tell us that story?
Yes, I wish I could look at the exact words, but it was something about how, you know, I was silent because I was doing some healing, and everyone was asking him a question. So I was told I could just write a question down and he would write back to me. So I wrote down, you know, that I am taking my art and I'm becoming, you know, turning it into a business. Like, how do I continue basically to create in a way, that is true, you know, even though it's sort of commercial. I can't remember. It was much more eloquently put than that.
And
he just wrote back, have no expectations and you'll have no fear. And that really permeated everything. You know, as long as I have no fear, my music will always come from the truest source inside myself. And so I always tried to kind of navigate that way. It's like, well, if great things happen, great. If not, you know, at least I'm singing, you know, it doesn't really matter if I get the big record deal or a giant hit song or sell a million albums. I mean, there are people on my team that care about that more than I do. But yeah, at the time I just thought if I let go of the expectations, then I won't be contracted and disappointed and sad, but dreams are different. You know, dreams, you can go big with the dreams, but, you know, cause they're a renewable resource, but expectations are a little corrosive. So he taught me that in that moment.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's a nice comment here from Malcolm who says, hi Tara, it was absolutely wonderful meeting you at the Hay Festival last June. So inspirational.
Oh, in Wales. Hi Malcolm.
Is that where it was? Okay. Yeah. And then Malcolm says, thank you once again for all the pleasure and happiness you have given me from your music and songs.
Oh, sweetheart. Yeah, I remember Malcolm very well. He had all of my albums in Wales. I mean, you just never know where you're going to reach when you're a musician. It's a really wonderful feeling. Yeah, that was very sweet. Thank you, Malcolm, for saying that.
There's one more question I think we've got time for. And this is Brad from New York who says, London Bridge, which you premiered on the book tour earlier this year, mm-hmm. will that be released in the near future on its own or as an EP or album?
Yes, it will be. I'm right now working on a collection of songs that are sort of just in a bit of a different direction. And I'll be recording that and it'll probably be an EP, probably 5 or 6 songs. But I'm going to hopefully be recording in the winter in the UK, in London. And I have a tour in the UK all summer, next summer. So those haven't been released yet, but I could play that song if he wants.
Oh, that would be cool. I also wanted to ask you about Gene McClellan and how he impacted your life and your song Silence. I don't know if we have time for 2 songs, but artist choice.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, that one is more is a different one. I would need different instruments for that one. Yeah, he impacted that song because I wrote it on the day he passed away. And for those who know Gene McClellan's work, he and my dad were a touring duo for 20 years, and he wrote Put Your Hand in the Hand and Snowbird and some, you know, famous songs. And yeah, on the day he passed away, it was a really sad day for our family, and I wrote that song then. But that's the title track for my very first album. So if you go on Spotify and look up Silence, you'll hear that. And I'm going to be putting out a live version of that song very soon as well.
And you and Gene's daughter wrote a song together. What was the name of that song?
That song was called This Storm. This Storm. Yeah. Yeah. And it was really beautiful. And we wrote that, you know, during the pandemic, because we sort of wanted to reach out into the world, and, one song of the year at the PEI Music Awards. So we were very thrilled, but it's so nice for Catherine and I to be able to work together, just because our fathers were so close, and she's also very Zen. So it's kind of nice. We both sort of, you know, went from, you know, that modality of belief to, you know, Buddhism. But we are, we're going to be touring together in the UK as well.
So oh, that's exciting to hear.
Yes. Yes.
Very nice. Well, folks, we've been having the pleasure of speaking with Tara McLean about her new memoir, Song of the Sparrow. And it's a really fantastic book. I really encourage everyone to read it. It was so moving and gripping. I couldn't put it down. So please go ahead and grab that book and do yourself a favor. And Tara, it's been really great to have you here with us. And I believe you're going to share a song with us before we go.
Yes, let's do one more. Just take out my earplugs for this.
Yes.
So which one should I do? London Bridge or this?
London Bridge or After the Storm?
Or This Storm, yeah.
Or This Storm, sorry. Which one's inspiring you? Sure. If that one's whatever one's moving you, I would say.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would say we'll do This Storm because, you know, the world is, you know, Brad, I will get you a recording of London Bridge as soon as I can. The world right now feels like it's in another storm, and they just seem to keep coming, more and more frequently. So yeah, I think the song might be relevant.
When the world is spinning round and round, ashes, ashes, we all fall down. When we wake up in a scary dream, and all we want is to go back to sleep.
Wow, Tara McLean, it has been a real honor to have you here this evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've loved every minute. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. And thank you to Banyan Books and to Jacob for helping put this together as well. So thank you. Thank you so much, Ross.
Thanks for joining us for Branches of Wisdom, a podcast of Banyan Books and Sound, Canada's spiritual and healing resource since 1970. Our podcast producer is Jacob Steele. The show is edited by Abdo Habani. Watch all our conversations on YouTube by searching for Banyan Books or listen on your favorite podcast platform. Please subscribe, follow, like, and leave your reviews and comments. We love to hear from you. For all our live events, books, and more, visit us at banyan.com.